If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Furious Italians. Are there any other kind? Corrupt officials? The legendary Jim McLean, furious again? A seaplane? All of these feature in part one of The Big Interview with Walter Smith, which we recorded on the stunning grounds of Cameron House on the bonny, bonny banks of Loch Lomond. It was going to take something special to outdo that scenery, but Walter managed just that, recalling his time spent working on McLean at Dundee United, at the epicentre of a European revolution in Scottish football, and how that iconic manager inspired loyalty in his players, as well as fear. Their United side reached the semi-finals of the European Cup, but that campaign ended in Rome on a night made infamous by a crooked referee and the physical threats that Roma's players made to McLean. Walter explains how he helped the United manager escape from the tunnel unscathed, even though he himself took a few sore ones. Walter also talks about winning the European Youth Championship with Scotland in 1982. What do you mean? You didn't know that Scotland had been champions of Europe? They have. It was 82, during an era when it seemed as if the country would always produce exciting, natural footballers, and how only Andy Roxburgh already saw that that talent pool was about to dry up. Listen, enjoy. This is a special, interesting, often very funny guy. I like talking to him, but it was done for you. We are sitting by the banks of Loch Lomond. It's a privilege and an honour, quite exciting too, after a long time not seeing you, to be with Walter Smith. Walter, thank you very much indeed. Oh, I quit you've done with your house. The garden's not looking too bad.
No, it's quite nice actually. And as you can see, the aeroplanes outside.
Yeah, you keep up. They're not called biplanes, are they? Seaplanes?
No, they're seaplanes.
There is a seaplane about 100 metres from us, and I'd love to tell you that Walter arrived in it, but I think we're all going to depart in it. Loch Lomond's looking fine and smart. Is this a parcel of land and a beautiful building that brings back lots and lots of memories for you? This has played a part in your career.
Well, when I moved from Dundee United down to Rangers, we had obviously to look at being a Glaswegian coming back to Glasgow again. Well, actually, I was away in the World Cup in Mexico with Sir Alex Ferguson, and my wife was left with the chore of picking a place to live in. We live in Helensburgh, and we decided on Helensburgh. So we live there, and we've lived there for... That's 30 years now, so...
No joking, though. I mean, it's literally stunning. You're used to it. But we're sitting in the kind of drawing room that you could film, I don't know, Brideshead Revisited or whatever the current one, Downton Abbey in. The grounds are sensational. I'm over here from Spain out of a huge respect and admiration for the parts of your career that I was lucky enough to see or report on, meet you to talk about. But before we ever met, as you were Rangers manager and I was a young journalist, one of the things that strikes me is you went with Andy Roxburgh and we won that tournament, lifted that trophy against what I hope you'll remind was quite a good Dutch side. And nobody talks about it. Nobody even knows about it. Did it actually happen?
Yeah, it's one of those things. I had passed through my coaching badges at Largs, and Andy Roxburgh was in charge of the whole setup there, the coaching setup. And they decided that, or the SFA decided that it would be good if their director of coaching took one of the national teams. And at that time, we only had like the under 18 team, under 21 team, and the national team. So Andy was the the manager of the under-18 team. So I had been in the taking Dundee United reserve team as well. I started my coaching in very early, but Jim McLean. And I used to take the Dundee United reserve team and take their youth sides as well. So Andy asked me if I would join him in the national team setup. So I did that from about 1978-79 period. And we headed to Finland for a tournament there and European Championships. And we were drawn against Holland, Turkey and Albania in the sections. It was really interesting. Holland had one or two players that, you know, Van Basten and the like, who would go on and play and reach world renown and play for
the win the Euros in 88, not that long after.
We'd actually had quite a few players, Eric Black, Neil Cooper, who had been playing for their club throughout the season and were away in club duties, and we didn't have them for the finals. Obviously, both of them would have enhanced our team, but we didn't have them. So we were missing one or two players going to Finland, and we managed to get ourselves through to the final there. And
knocking out Holland en route.
Yeah.
Which is...
knocking out. So we did very well, and Andy had engendered a good spirit in that team. There was some really good players in it. They worked extremely hard over the time that we were in Finland. And we won that championship, and not only that, but it obviously got us inclusion into the World Youth Championships in Mexico, you know, in the following year. It was quite an adventure.
Paul McStay in your midfield.
Paul McStay.
Up front. The ones that stand out is Bowman, who played for United. Players who, I don't remember, Robin Ray in goals, but also Paul McStay, Pat Nevin, Ali Dick.
Yeah, they
were. Bit of a character, Ali, but one of the lost talents of Scottish football.
For Pat Nevin and for Ali, there was a throwback to, you know, a lot of Scottish wingers as such. You know, like when we always look back and to a period of time when you were playing and a great Celtic team, but they had players like Jimmy Johnson, Rangers had Bobby Henderson. And there was wingers of that type in nearly every team in the country. So it was a bit of a throwback, that one. But we handled it very well. And you know, you mentioned some individuals there, but effectively, for boys so young, they formed a good team, good work rate. One of my players at Dundee United, Gary McInnes, scored a goal against Holland, and you know, that was a major result for us. The Dutch were obviously one of the favourites, not only to win the European Championships, but to go on and lift the World Youth
Mexico
Championships,
yeah,
which in Mexico. So, a big result for us, and I sometimes feel Andy doesn't get a credit for that, for winning that tournament. It's the only time that it's ever happened in our country.
That's what I mean. So, I'm not expecting you to produce a ready-made explanation, but it's a bit weird that we yearn. We in our souls, we all think we're budding world champions. We're always going to win. We're always the best. One good result and the fire started again. But we win a tournament and it's completely forgotten. What the heck?
Well, it did get forgotten. I can remember, you know, coming back from there, there was very little media attention at that period when the group came back to Scotland as well with the European Championship. And, you know, that was something there. But one of the things that was great to be there, it was great to be in that environment. Equally going on to the finals in Mexico was just a fantastic experience for likes of myself as a young coach to go and see, you know, young teams from all over the world congregate and then come and play was great. But it was during that period of time that Andy's job as director of coaching was one that obviously stretched a bit deeper than just taking football teams. He had the whole coaching structure to put in place. And one day we went away, he said, I have to make a report about the future of Scottish football for the SFA. And he said to me, I'll give you it in I'll let you read it. And in his report, he stated that he was concerned that the number of players going to be available to the professional game was going to dwindle because of the change of environment that was happening within our country. The no more street football, you know, no more, well, park football as such. And at the time, I disagreed with them because at Dundee United, we had a decent youth policy. So did the other clubs. I was seeing players coming through at that early 80s stage, the young players. You mentioned Paul McStay, but, you know, Charlie Nicholas's and others that were at Celtic, and other young boys, but they were all coming through. And so I said to Mandy, they're coming through, they'll always come through. But when you look back now, he was correct. There are fewer and fewer talented Scottish players coming to the professional game now. We're getting players that are coming in, but individually talented players are few and far between over the last 10 odd years. So his assessment of that at that stage...
It was quite visionary.
Was something that when I look back on and I see it, I kind of obviously enjoyed the winning the European Youth Tournament. I enjoyed going to Mexico. But the thing that sticks in my head more than anything else was that report. Andy made that assessment in 1982-83. And
you wouldn't have thought it possible. Yes. I have to agree. That listening to that now, if you'd looked around and seen some of the things that we're about to talk about, beating regularly with all 11 Scots in, whether it's Celtic, Rangers weren't right then maybe so dominant in Europe, but Aberdeen, Dundee United, Celtic beating Ajax a couple of years later,
yes,
knocking out Cruyff and Ajax, you'd have looked around and thought, it's all happening, it's all coming through. That thing about we always believed it would be perpetual, maybe over the years, and maybe it's natural, maybe certain people stop trying, stop being methodical or forward thinking about it, because there'd always been a rich seam of players who liked the ball, knew what to do with it. Well,
it's a lack of forward thinking, you know, more than anything else. You know, if nobody had ever mentioned that to me, I would not blame them for not thinking about it. Mm-hmm. But this was a report that was sitting there, and as I say, it's the strangest aspect of that period that while we were enjoying the success of a youth team for the first or the only time that Scotland have won that championship, we were enjoying that success. But at the same time, Andy was saying, you know, this is something that in the future is not going to happen.
And it fell on deaf ears generally.
Yes. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I mean, it did. They obviously had to put the report in front of people at the SFA, but it fell on deaf ears. In fairness to the people in Scotland, it hasn't only happened in Scotland. It has happened in a great number of countries. And although we only concern ourselves with our own country, it's happening in more countries than we imagine. I think that the standard of individual players that are coming to the professional game is now as low as it's been, not just in Scotland, but as I say, in a lot of countries across Europe. Countries like Iceland have tried to adjust it recently.
That's the model about it. Their
reasons are maybe different from Scotland's. Ours, I think, can be placed in terms of negligence, whereas for them, you know, it was always difficult to have a facility for kids to train and do that. But they've adjusted to it. Now, we still, I don't think, have adjusted to that aspect of it.
This isn't where I was going to go, because you have always struck me, and I'd like to say we share a fascination for aspects of continental football, and that's the main reason for this big interview today. But by the time you take over successfully at Scotland, before moving back to Rangers, had things noticeably changed in the SFA in terms of vision, forward planning, openness to the need to radically change our ability to develop and seed good football players and good football coaches at youth level?
Yeah, it has changed. It's in the process of changing. At the present moment, I think Scotland, we became aware of that aspect of it. And I think now they're trying very hard to do something about it. little bit disappointing in terms of the timing. We've left it late.
Yeah.
But it's better now that we do it rather than not approach it. And we're doing so now. I'm starting to live it through my grandkids. You know, you have grandkids who come and play, and you actually see what they have to do to enjoy their football in comparison to what I had to do to enjoy mine. Mine was just to walk out the door and go to a local park. There was always a game. You could walk out the door and there'd be a game in the street. It was always there. Now the kids have to be taken to wherever they've got to be. The logistic aspects of it put a pressure on parents, there's absolutely no doubt about it. But now the facilities are there, and I think we're just beginning to awaken to the fact that, you know, we need to use the facility that we have. We need to try and find a way of doing it. Schools are starting to go back now to have football teams and different things like that. And I think we're starting to see a circumstance where we are getting kids to play the requisite number of hours that's required to make them good at whatever they're going to do.
And understanding about what we do with those hours, that they need to be on the ball, that they need to be enjoying, developing their touch.
No, there's no secret to play football. You know, that it's just to play football. It develops through a circumstance that, and I don't think at any age, I mean, if I look at my grandkids, I'm my two oldest, the boys are nine. So, you know, they've been playing for 3-4 years now, and they play away and they love playing. So that for them, I think, so tell me about it. Where do they go to play nowadays? You know, that's it. They can't just go out into the street. They can't do that. Their parents have to take them there. Their grandparents have to take them. I'm
it's
doing
an active choice,
yes,
rather than just wondering, there's my opportunity.
Just something that your parents were involved in. The parents have to be involved in this. And this is where we still have a problem in a lot of the more deprived areas in our country. We still have to have a circumstance here where I think we adjust to them more than anything else. We were all brought up in working class societies in Glasgow, and football was the main thing that we did do. Now there are other aspects that develop that takes kids' attention. But nobody's going to tell me that kids nowadays don't love playing football. Nobody's going to tell me that we have a circumstance that once they start to play, they've not got their heroes. They've got them all now. Whereas ours used to be Scottish. Nowadays, we're getting it that television's made it that they have heroes in Barcelona and Madrid and Munich and, you know, all over Europe. They'll pick players that they love. You go to the grandkids' training sessions and they've all got foreign football club jerseys on. I mean, so the circumstance changes.
Thank you.
But
I like that.
Yeah.
As long as it's Spanish
but the circumstance
based.
Changes.
Yeah.
But, you know, the fact is that all we need is to get them to play as much football as they possibly can. And they're making inroads in that. The SFA have started to do that now.
Would it be a tremendous boost for this process that you're talking around the country if there were 6 or 7 more full-size indoor stadium with 4G surfaces?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that, you know, that it's a necessary factor for us to do that. You know, I think, you know, when we look at the problems that we have, social problems that we have in Scotland, maybe people would say, well, you know, why spend all that money and doing all that when we could be doing it and other things. I can see that point.
The argument is if you get kids fit and you get kids off the street and enjoying themselves and playing football, then that has a immediate impact on the very social problems that people want to throw money at.
Yeah, that would be my argument. But we're slightly biased,
teasing it out
in a sense that that's
also right,
and that's what we want to do.
Nail it for we've a lot of younger listeners who are exactly in the situation that you talked about, who've never really seen, they've heard about street football, like that you could literally go out. Describe that specifically, growing up wherever you. Grew up in Lanark or East End?
I grew up in Carmyle, just about maybe 2-3 miles from Celtic Park. I was there, just on the edge of the city boundaries. So like I mean, like every other kid at the time, it was a small village. There's only maybe 1,500, 2,000 people in it. They are surrounded by steelworks and etc. But enjoyable childhood, and most of that was spent playing football. And
but literally, I mean, because
that's what they did.
These aren't golden. I know because you know we're slightly different ages, but I grew up this. The same focus, but always out with the ball, yeah, run the grass into mud. But you're literally talking about there's always a game, street,
you could always
park,
find a
whatever.
Game. You could always find a game in the village. It didn't matter, you know, if you went out, especially if you owned the ball. If you had a ball, you know, you were always popular. But, you know, you would go down and there was a park just 50 yards from where I lived, and there was always a game there. And it might have been sometimes two aside and sometimes it might have been tennis-side, it didn't matter, you know, and they didn't bother too much about, you know, odd numbers or anything like that. I mean, you just went down and you picked a team. And one of the more remarkable things in the days of bibs and things like that we have and all the equipment that we have, that we used to just pick the teams. And it was one of those things, you soon got to know who was in your team and who wasn't, and there was no indication, jersey-wise or otherwise, that was the case. But that's what we did in Glasgow. That would have been a circumstance in any street. Everybody played, and you played between the lampposts and the fences where the goals, and you played, and that was where you learned your football there, and as I say, in the parks.
Playing in the street has always fascinated me because you have to use your head a little bit.
A strange thing, I was driving into Glasgow the other day, and I saw a big canvas advert, "Do you want to play street football?" And, you know, I don't know, you know, what, how they go about it or what they're going to do, but do you want to play street football? And it took me back, and I thought, well, that's great. So I just wonder how they're going to do it, and I don't know the setup. I just thought, but that's where the majority of kids learn to play.
The second thing I wanted to pick up on is that you talked about nowadays, like the kids' heroes as they grow up will maybe be in Munich or Milan or Barcelona or whatever. Television, the internet, doesn't matter, marketing. When you first get hit by European football, where is it? Who is it?
I think, you know, the early days, my grandfather was he lived with us, I lived with the family, and he was a Rangers supporter, and he took me to Ibrox, and I remember, you know, going and having big nights. I remember going to a game against Eintracht Frankfurt, and semi-final of Cup Winners' Cup or whatever it was away back in the early 60s.
Yeah.
Way back in the early 60s. And that was my first kind of recollection of going.
It's going to be 67.
I just remember going there. The vaguish memories, you know, at the present moment because you were younger. And then I started to go and play myself, and then I signed for Dundee United in November 1966. I was going to say 96 there, which I wish it was. It's not, it was 1966. And they beat Barcelona.
So they did.
On the two occasions, just in the weeks that I was leading up to me signing for them as a young boy. And they beat Barcelona on two occasions, 3-2 on two occasions. And Jerry Kerr's team there was full of boys who were good professional players, and it was there, and they had two fantastic results. It was there, so that was a kind of introductory kind of aspect, even at the professional end of the game, you know. But that was there, so I suppose that was the start professionally, and then you know you always started to go the Celtic and Rangers reaching European finals, you know, for Cup Winners' Cup, Celtic winning a European Cup, and things like that brought, you know, European football into focus for a youngster. But I don't think that we had the in-depth knowledge of the clubs who were coming from foreign countries.
It was impossible then, wasn't it?
That we do now.
You play some European football for United, and
I do.
And you did, and I'm not going to ask you for a minute by minute of September 1977, but I love the fact that you'd go on to sign his son, but you play against Finn Laudrup for Dundee United against Copenhagen. So I want to talk about the transformation between playing Brian and Michael Ledrup's dad, Finn Ledrup, in Copenhagen and losing 3-0 in 77. And then Lokeren, not able to beat Lokeren in 1980. And by 1981, your coach with Jim as the manager, Dundee United 5, Borussia Mönchengladbach 0. It's the Borussia Mönchengladbach of Jupp Heynckes with Lothar Matthäus playing sweeper defender. Right throughout the team, there's absolute quality. At that stage, Borussia Mönchengladbach are competitors for the German title, regularly doing well in Europe. And I'll just read it again. 5-0. Ralf Milne, Billy Kirkwood, Paul Sturt, Paul Hegarty, Eamon Bannon, you and Jim McLean. And it begins there. Describe the feeling of being able to take on big European clubs and beat them regularly. What happened? What was it like? What memories do you have of playing?
Well, that one game, I think, more than anything else, gave Dundee United, as a club, and a sort of more prominent position in European football. People sat up and took notice for a Scottish team out with Rangers and Celtic to win in the manner that United did that night. It was great. But Tannadice was a tight pitch. It's fantastic atmosphere at Tannadice in European nights. And on that night, everything about our team just seemed to click. And we played extremely well. And we got ourselves, you know, into that winning position and kept going. And I must admit, it was a fantastic performance by us overall. And, you know, I think more than anything else, that night, Jim McLean's work with Dundee United, you know, I think that night, I think even Jim himself, you know, could see the progression. And I think that meant more to him than the result, which would echo around Europe as saying, you know, 5-0, Borussia Mönchengladbach. How did they do that? How did they manage to? But having been there as a player and then asked to go into the staff as coaching, I could see the work that Jim McLean did and the earlier. And it's down to him. I mean, you know, people say to me, you were a coach there and you were assistant manager there. Yeah, you play a part. But the whole club was Jim McLean at that time. And he's the person that deserves more credit for United's rise than anyone.
I can't go by that without asking about Jim, because the Jim now, I think, is predominantly remembered for having this ferocious temper. Players now talk about, you're smiling because I don't know a millionth of it. The players now, when we went to do the big interview with David Moyes, Billy McKinley was there, and Billy told some stories. And that was in the latter days when Jim had probably become PC. The long and short is, I'm saying that despite Jim being very particular, very unusual, and doing things that wouldn't be allowed now, there must have been some vision, some talent there that's probably now neglected, yeah, when people talk about him.
That's the thing. The managers then, you know, were probably more demanding of people than currently. You know, the demands on a footballer just now are there for everyone. They pay massive fees for them. They get, in a lot of cases, they get paid massive fees for them and things like that. But then it wasn't the case. You know, the managers and coaches felt they had to be a driving force. And that was Jim. But, I mean, everybody played and played for him. So, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, we were all, myself as a player, and on the wrong end of one of his rants. But by the same token, there's no player who went into Dundee United, came out a poorer player. Every one of them enhanced their careers by having played at Dundee
United. Why? Because he taught them?
Yeah, because the circumstance, he was meticulous in terms of what he did and what he wanted specifically on the pitch. You've got to say that the players at Dundee United responded to that. I'm not saying that they enjoyed it a lot of time. Nobody would enjoy it, but they enjoyed the results of it. And it got the majority of them careers that maybe they might not have had. It was there. So I mean, and there's a lot made of, you know, Sir Alec Ferguson and his hairdryer treatment and his things like that, and Jim McLean, people that know him. But these people had players that followed them to success. Now that's the bottom line. It's not all about bawling and shouting and bullying and getting there. It's not at all.
Those stereotypes lingered far, far too long.
The main thing is that for Scottish football, during that period, you know, Sir Alec Ferguson, Jim McLean, Jock Stein, and others, these people, you know, were fantastic managers and coaches, you know, at the time. And they brought a profile to Scotland that, you know, we never really had. When you look at our league, you know, then Rangers, Celtic, Dundee United, Aberdeen, Hearts, the period of the late 70s into the early 80s, there was a fantastic period football-wise for Scotland.
Was there a craftiness about those three men, about how to get into players' heads? This famous story about Jock saying to Jimmy Johnson, who hated flying, if you make sure that this team's hammered. But I've seen Sir Alex been just as shrewd about getting into the mind of a player. Do you know what I mean?
Graeme, everybody looks back at successful people and brings specific stories. These people, you know, they're the leaders. They make demands on people. That's what you do when you've got a lead. And as I say, the one thing from my own point of view, it was a great period, you know, in Scotland, they're the last great period of players, and the fact that we had fantastic players like Souness and Dalglish and others there that were among the best players in the world. But we also had a group of coaches and managers that were taking teams to be the best.
Everybody listens to the big interview knows my allegiance to Pittodrie. So therefore, it was just devastating every time your United came up, and Paul Sturrock would play as if he was Pelé. Routinely, United would win at Pittodrie. But given the years have passed a little bit, I'm willing to cede a little bit of space to the other half of the new firm and say, Dundee United were damn good. And I remember a phone call once, years ago now, you telling me something that I hadn't known in the 80s, that AC Milan, or at least maybe a group of Italian sides, sent an expedition to United and to Aberdeen to spend time, early 80s I'd say, to try and watch training, to try and learn, to try and say, what is it that these small provincial clubs have got right? Do I remember that conversation correctly? And
yes.
What went on?
Well, they decided that they were looking at teams in Scotland and saying, well, how come this country of 5 million people is producing these teams who can play? And remember, we didn't have a circumstance then where we had a whole lot of foreign players playing in a team. There were, you know,
Very few then.
If we looked, there's very, very few at that period. If we're looking at Aberdeen, Dundee United, Rangers and Celtic, there was very few foreign players. So they looked at that. So what they did was they brought their whole, everyone who was sitting, their course was a year in Coverciano, with the final part of it.
So they're equivalent of large,
is
it?
It's a year, more or less, full time. And they take their coaches around, and they decided to come to Scotland to do that, and they turned up to our training at Dundee United. They turned up to Aberdeen, to Rangers, to Celtic, and they then sent this booklet over back to Dundee United, where they had stayed with us for a week and looked at all our training and everything that we did, and had conversations with Jim McLean. Unfortunately for us, it was in Italian, but it's none of us could understand. But the actual drawings and the football exercises that they had taken down were all there, and their whole book was an in-depth book about their trip to Scotland.
But going abroad to play then, I want you, I'm showing a picture that doesn't come up well on podcasts, but it's the semi-final of the European Cup. You and Jim McLean have beaten Roma 2-0 at Tannadice. And there's a photo here in a game which, when I was watching it, didn't look as if the referee was neutral. That's my position. And you and Jim McLean, two tough soldiers, you wouldn't easily be cowed, are surrounded by Roma players One of them looks as if he's about to jump you. The other one is middle fingering you. They're up close. Those three would be banned now for, I don't know, 6 or 7 years. Leo Messi, yesterday, had been banned for 4 international matches, which will see Argentina probably not qualify for the World Cup in Russia. And that photo, which is iconic, represents a brutal, brutal night where not only am I talking about the fact that Roma won 3-0, there are huge suspicions over how that happened. In my case, you can speak for yourself. But European football didn't used to be Champions League and nice and safe and in, out, and everybody pats each other on the back and it's all stewarded and marshalled. Even in the early 80s, there was an element of the Wild West about it. I've described that beautifully for the people listening. Tell me the background to that picture. Tell me what memories it stimulates.
Dundee United, as I already said, Tannadice was an imposing place to go and play. And, you know, the final of the European Cup at that time was going to be played in Roma Stadium. So there was a massive pressure on them. The Olympic Stadium in Rome, the venue for the final, gave them a great opportunity. So when I came to Tannadice, we were sitting there, it was 0-0 half-time, and as usual, having a slight slope at Tannadice, we start the second half, and I remember Jim saying at half-time, look, we're doing really well, we played really well. He said, you know, but we've got to try and turn this into goals, and, you know, like to try and get an advantage. And you could see that Roma were a little bit rattled out their normal way of playing. And we got a couple of goals. Won the game 2-0. During the game, the ball had bounced down towards our dugout, and Jim had got the ball and had bounced it back to one of the players who was coming up to get it. And the player said something in Italian to him, but looked kind of aggressive. I couldn't understand why at the time. So basically nothing happened in the game. And we won the match. And afterwards, they were accusing Dundee United of drugs and taking, you know, after the game, the president was saying, how could they run around like that for 90 minutes, et cetera, et cetera.
I didn't know that.
All this kind of thing. So when we arrived, and it was noticeable that there was a great deal of animosity towards our team when we were there, and we thought it was just that was one of the, that happens, you know, they're making sure we feel as uncomfortable as possible. So waiters in the hotel were none too friendly, unlike Italian people in general.
Yeah.
And so it was a kind of hostile atmosphere, even out with. So we go to the game, and obviously getting to the stadium and all the rest of the stuff, everything was hostile. The whole environment was.
Is it getting to stadium? Does it reach the?
I still had
stage
no idea why this was taking place, except for the fact that I thought this was a ploy on behalf of the air to sort of.
Does it feel threatening in any way? With the fans, well, the boss, and that.
Well, it was, but I mean, when the game was finished, that was there, and I must say the referee was later found to have taken bribes. He was found guilty of that. Yeah. So.
Do you see that during the game?
No, I must say in the game, you know, like when I was there, I don't think there was a decision there that I would have said, you know, turn the game or anything like that. You've got to remember that Roma were a really good team, but the referee, as I say, and maybe 10 years, 15 years later, got found guilty of taking bribes, not just in that game, but in a number of European games. And I couldn't understand the hostility. That picture was taken, that you showed me there, was taken after the game. And we got into a tunnel, and the tunnel there was a tunnel, but the door to the dressing room was halfway up the tunnel, and it was only an ordinary door. That was all. And you walked up a flight of stairs into the dressing room. So it started to get kind of nasty as we got towards the... So Jim managed to escape up... and left John Gardner, a reserve goalie, and I to kind of kind of hold them off. But afterwards, what actually happened was that they had when Roma had gone back to their manager Nils Lidholm, who's a Swedish manager,
legend,
famed, a legendary manager, had said that on the altercation
in the first game,
at the dugout between Conte and Jim McLean was one where Jim had sworn at, and called him an Italian whatever, right? Now, I was there with him and he didn't. So they exaggerated this whole case. That was European football. The stakes were high for both the clubs. For me, the biggest disappointment was, you know, for Jim McLean to take a provincial team like Dundee United to that level and have an opportunity through winning 2-0 for the first game was probably goes down as one of the biggest disappointments. If anything, maybe Jim deserved a day in the sun, if you like, in terms of putting them up there with the very best European managers of reaching a European Cup final.
The Big Interview is produced by Backpage and me, Graham Hunter. The music you always hear, the music that you love, is Beer Jacket. You can enter exclusive competitions and put your questions to our future Big Interview guests by getting on the mailing list at grahamhunter.tv. Yes, several thousand of you have done it, but come on, slackers at the back, sign up. Thanks for being there. Without you, this would be fun, but a lot less fun. See you soon.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.